I think sales is a life skill. It is a minimum requirement for existence. And ideally, they should teach it in school. Nobody wants to teach you how to sell. I didn't learn this in my sleep. I did not like just wake up one day and become a good salesperson, right? So I did this few things and I learned a few things. So instead of depending on me to bring your sales result every time, let me help you to build your team which can deliver like me. Like, it's not something I only can do. Guess what? Your team can also do. And if you can do it from your team, then you will not need me.
On the Be Your Own Boss podcast, we talk about entrepreneurship, we talk about business. And when it comes to business, one of the most important skills, if there was just one skill that you need to learn as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, and that would be sales, right? The most important skill in business is selling, because sales is the lifeline of a business. That's what we're going to talk about today. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, our guest this week is Alifia Sura, the founder of Rooftop Sales, an organization that helps individuals and corporates improve their selling skills, focusing on growing revenue. And Alifia is born and raised in Mumbai. She moved to Dubai once she got married, and she runs a company here. So let's hear from Alifia about her story, her journey. Alifia, thank you so much for taking our time and joining us here on the Be Your Own Boss podcast.
It's a pleasure, Sachin, and it's always lovely to see your inspiring stories, and I think you're flooding the YouTube. Congratulations on the awesome work that you've already achieved.
Thank you.
And your anniversary that you recently had. So well done on that. And thank you for having me.
So Alifia, let's start with your story with the background of Mumbai. When you started your career in sales pretty early, right? You were what, 16 when you started selling? So tell us about that. What led you to choose sales as a career at that age, and what was the situation back then?
Well, I come from a middle class to average family, and an ambitious parents, with very ambitious parents. So we started our early schooling in a government sort of a school, which was cool and rocking because everybody was equal. But suddenly my ambitious parents thought about putting us into a private school where the other students and other kids in the class were from much more well-to-do families. And suddenly the cost of schooling, like from our, our own recreation angle, was different, you know, like where we used to go earlier, restaurants was very different. We used to eat street food earlier. But now these girls here wanted to go into restaurants and stuff. And for some reason, our pocket money did not change. So we moved from the government school to a private school, but the pocket money remained like the government school. And it just wasn't enough to make ends meet. There was a point when I said, you know what, I'm not going to justify why I need a second movie in the same month, or why I need a second dinner or restaurant outing with another group of friends from the same class for another. And after a point, I was like, you know what, this is not happening. And I was getting irritated by pleading. And I tried all my sales tricks with my parents. And
so
at one point, it was just not working. Yeah, and it was just not working. So then I said, you know what, I need to go find someone else who could listen to a little bit of sales technique. And I think sales came that time. And in 1990s, mid-1990s, 2000, 1996, 95, 90, you know, up to 2000 was the time when mobile phones were just launched.
Yeah.
And SIM cards, you know, India being a marathon of competitor telecos, the mobile phones and SIM cards had just started coming, and nobody wanted to sell them. So I got some little small opportunity and I've grabbed it.
Okay. So you were selling SIM cards?
I was selling SIM cards when people were buying pagers and earlier, you know, and then the brand new cell phones and the Nokias and the Motorolas and those times we had the Max Touch and the BPL, which is today's Vodafone.
Yeah.
So, they were killing each other and trying to get those expensive, very, very expensive SIM cards in the hand of customers.
Yeah.
So we managed to get some quick freelance sort of, you know, sell a SIM card and I would get like 25 rupees back then. And my pocket money was 2 rupees per day.
So one SIM card you sell, you get 25 rupees.
Yeah, so I'm done for 10 days, you know, and I can actually go afford whatever I want in whichever restaurant I want. So it was lovely. So all I had to do was sell 2 or 3 extra SIM cards a month.
Yeah.
And I was the king of the game.
Brilliant. And when you started selling, what were the initial challenges? How did you overcome those? Because you didn't have any experience of selling as such. You got into the job of a salesperson.
Well, actually, what happened is what worked for me was that I moved into a private school. So people, at least the parents of my friends were rich. And it was challenging initially, but I figured in a way that, of course, you know, it's a different segment of life. The people where we came from were only barely using pagers back then, right? Mm. And not even pagers, more or less. But it's a different segment of a market which would buy a cell phone. And back then, the charges were horrendous.
Yeah.
And still, the quality was not reliable. Like for every important call, people would prefer a landline. I'm like, oh, it's an important call. I'll not take a chance because the network can drop and stuff like that. But it was interesting. Today when I understand the world of real sales, the professional world of sales, I understand it was something called as a high ticket selling, where you go and sell to someone which is not in your direct network. But how do you go and sell to a much higher company or a much bigger customer profile? Most of the times we try to make ends meet by selling people who are like us, you know, like, but that's when you start haggling on profit margins and get haggling on low cost deals and low cost whatever. But can you get to a new segment which is a little higher than your current domain? And then 2 or 3 SIM cards was more than enough. Like, you know, imagine if I was selling pagers back then, I would have to sell like at least 50 to make that same 25 rupees.
Yeah.
But here it was like 2 or 3 was enough to give me 100 in an extra month and I was done.
This point about the getting into the right environment where you're, you know, going above your circle of friends and, you know, that environment, right? I think this is very, very important. So in your case, when you, you know, stepped up your game and, you know, you started moving with people above your, your circle, how was that, like, how was that experience for you? Did you face any challenges at that time, like, you know, to be accepted and...
I think I realized, this is the thing about selling, you know, because nobody actually, unfortunately, teaches you anything. And most people who are, hats off to the people who are in sales, you know, really, but most people who learn how to sell are by getting doors shut on their face, by getting thrown out of the door. And there is no like real shortcut. Can someone like just tell me that this is not the right clientele? Like earlier I started with selling to, you know, shopkeepers in my street where we used to live. Initially, I was selling to, like, you know, to the comfortable audience, like my relatives and stuff. But guess what? They were all in the same income bracket of my family. And obviously, nobody was thinking about mobile phones. And then luckily, what happened to me was, of course, my parents, my friends and their parents is who I would pitch. Like sometimes we would have play dates and I would tell them that, auntie, uncle, are you like, what do you buy? Why don't you use a phone and mobile and stuff like that? And that was what was working. But then we had a very high end school, very close to my school. It was like one of the ICSE and the most premium, like, you know, their fees was like another level. And it was one of the most premium schools, which was like next street of my school.
Okay.
And what I started doing is started making friendships there. And then, not only the parents, but even the children had mobile phones, like children in the higher grade years and stuff like that. Even they had cell phones, like, you know, like, so that changed the game a lot because then it was like, all I had to do was after a school, especially when it was a New Year night party or if there was a certain birthday bash or if I would have needed a new dress or something or, you know, anything like that, then I would go to those areas. And so I think you change your environment, you change your lifestyle a little bit. You understand what where your target client is, you know, something like that. Yeah. That's some cliche sort of a way, but can you move out of your current environment and do something different?
Yeah.
So that's something, it was a very valuable lesson, which I learned in a very early age.
Yeah.
But also one thing that happened was it gave me this entire arrogance and it gave me this entire new level of confidence of not depending financially also on anybody.
Yeah.
So I think, and that was like a vampire, you know, you taste your first streak of blood, right? And then you're not going back. It's like then it just never stopped, right? And it was like whether I was in college or junior college or whatever, I always had some sort of financial income
right
all throughout. So awesome. I never stopped.
Awesome. You started early and you've so that like that gives you like a, you know, a lot of experience in sales, and you've seen the success in this one. Once you finished your education and stuff like that, what kind of jobs did you go into?
Well, again, I had a very inspiring mom, to be honest. Very early on, she introduced me to certain courses, which allowed me to take a good job, for example. So like when I was still in my 12th grade, I did like a 6 months of IATA, which is like the highest qualification you need to work in a travel agency. So this was a certification from Geneva. Now, this gave me a job immediately in spite of being like, what, 20 years old. I could take a full-time job in a travel agency. So I was on a full-time salary. So I was not like a kid or an intern or part-time or anything. And my college used to get over from 7 to 10 a.m., 7 a.m. to 10. That was my college hours. And then from 10 to 7, I had a job. So I would literally like from 10:15, 10:30, I would get, and then till 7, I had a full-time job during my senior college.
Wow.
You know, so I think that was my first breakthrough. And then again, education was a very high value in my family. So I did like a triple postgraduate. So I'm a three postgraduate. So I did my MBA and my Master's of Accountancy together.
Awesome.
And then while I was working, I did a Master's of Tourism. So education was such a high weightage in our family because, again, my mom didn't get a chance to get educated because of which she was always on a pay, you know, like a lesser pay for her, no matter, even in spite of she was doing everything. But she, just because she didn't have that schooling completed and things like that as a dropout, she would just be on a lower pay scale. So because of which, obviously, you know, we get values from what you experience, right? So you will give your children what you learned.
Yeah.
And with that, her value system was going very high on education. So,
well, I think you're right. Like the credit goes to her and also to you to implement that and, you know, stick to it. Because once people start earning, it's difficult to continue your studies because now you've tasted the blood, right?
Yeah,
you want to start earning money and you want to like finish your education quickly. And I mean, this is the tendency usually, but hats off to you that you continued. I mean, what are the excuses that people have for not studying, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my financial condition was not good. Here's someone who struggled financially and still did it.
Yeah.
Or I had to start working early. But you started working early and you still did it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. I used to hate it when she would. Her ambition of life was just go fill entrance exam forms. And then she would be like, did I tell you to study? You know, like, just go and give just an entrance exam in just 2 hours. Just go write the paper. Did I tell you to study? No. That was her excuse. And then she would like next day after filling the form, she would bring those entrance exam books, you know, those big fat books and keep it on the table. I'm just keeping them here, but I'm not telling you to study. She used to psychologically play me. I think she was a salesperson also. She knew how to psychologically play me, you know, because, you know, sometimes girls have this thing that you can't be failing and things like that. And she knew how to play with that emotion. But I think that's also, maybe I got my sales from her.
Yeah. So once you got the job in the travel industry, and then how did Dubai happen then? When did you move to Dubai?
Well, that was an export-import transaction.
Export-import?
Yeah, I was exported and imported by my in-laws. So it was an arranged marriage. So I got married.
Okay.
And so it was like overseas. So parents exported me, in-laws imported me, and here I was in 2004.
Right. And did you ever think when you came to Dubai, or even before that, when you were working in India, did you think that you'll become a businesswoman one day?
No, never actually. My father was a businessman, to be honest. But I never, the education system trains you to be employees. My mom was actually a freelancer, businesswoman eventually. She was very, very credible, very powerful woman, to be honest. But I had both my parents financially not want employment. But I never actually imagined I would. My in-laws are a family business, third generation now. So I think maybe I was just surrounded by business. But no, I never imagined, to be very honest.
So when you came to Dubai, what was your plan like? I mean, did you take up a job here once you landed here in Dubai, or after you got married?
Yeah, so before I got married, I had a 7-year full-time work experience. So that was like, and something my mom would always say that, don't waste time learning how to cook and being a house, because after you get married, you will need this experience because you will have to cook no matter what you do. Even if you hate it or you don't know at all, you'll still have to figure out a way to cook for the entire family, not only for just yourself. So she would be like, don't waste your time learning to cook. Go. Take yourself some work experience. She was very weird and she was very different from a Muslim family that we had, So but from a traditional, she was very different. I think she nurtured my entire whatever I am today. And a lot of kudos to her. Though I used to hate her. But she was I had a list in my diary that all the reasons why I'm not supposed to love my mom. Because every time she would do something nice, then I would start liking her again. Then I would have to go back and read that book saying, oh no, listen, she didn't let me go to that party. She stopped me from getting more pocket money from Papa. Oh, I had all those things that, she's not supposed to be loved.
That's cute.
And all those stuff we do, right? So, but every time, so when I came to Dubai, so I didn't have any plans. Like it was an arranged marriage, and of course, I think it was a very well done family. So we didn't have much, and it was a joint family. We used to live with a lot of people, like 3 uncles and stuff like that, right? So a lot of elder ladies in the house who knew how to take care of the house, which I had not, unfortunately, learned in my own. obviously you learn when you start handling a home, but I was very bad at it, to be honest. And because I had a lot of free time and I wasn't doing much because I didn't know how to do much. But of course, I had to learn. And then they were okay to allow me to kind of, apply and stuff. And then it took me like 6 months or so to actually get my first job. But as soon as I came to Dubai, I was like learning driving license. And then what I would do is I had this Bilhassa Driving Institute, and they pick you from home and they take you. And then they normally drop you back home. But instead of coming back home, I would sit in any bus and go anywhere. So I had the Dubai tourism map. So I would sit in any bus number and go like anywhere. Like once I would go to Dera Museum, once I would go to a creek, once I would go to I would just sit in any bus because they had to give me one transport. And then I would get down anywhere. And then I would like roam around that area just to see what it is there and stuff like that. And one day I landed in DTCM, which is Dubai Tourism Authority. And because I'd done like travel agency and stuff, I went to this Dubai tourism and I was just out of curiosity. And then I met this VP of marketing in Dubai tourism. And he was writing his, in 2005, right? So he was writing his white paper for Vision 2010. And because I was an MBA student, he told me to help him. And I showed him the white paper I had written in my college, in my MBA final paper. And he was very impressed and stuff like that. He was like, why don't you support and come? And, so it was free. I wasn't taking a salary, but I started going there then. So after my driving, I would take that same bus every day. And then either mom would pick me up or some of the company drivers would pick me up or something like that. Because there was no buses that time. There was no public transport in Dubai in 2005 at all. And taxis were horrendously expensive. I was still I was still multiplying everything by Indian rupees, and I would be like, oh, impossible, right? And Dera and where we were living was a big fare, really. Yeah. So someone would pick me up anytime anyone would be available. So this was my first thing where they were writing Vision 2010.
Yeah.
And back then, the tourism inflow in Dubai was 6 million tourists or 5 million in the airport. Okay. And they wanted to make it 10 million or 15 million. That was their Vision 2010. To bring it to 15 million. Actually, it was 15 million. It was Vision 2010. And their target was to bring 15 million tourists by 2010.
Okay.
So
the idea was to promote Dubai as a tourist and tourism destination.
So they have all sorts of, you know, what you do.
Yeah.
Analytics. And they had so much data about how many people coming, which nationality, and all that. And you make information out of that data and you make a strategy out of it, that how to tap, then what should be the marketing plan? How do we reach out to those countries and get them to come here? And what should be the internal strategy to make it more attractive for those people to come? And so that was my first exposure to work.
Wow. Alifia, there are a couple of things in this part of the story that you just said, and I want to highlight those couple of things here. Number one is that the first thing you did after you settled down here in Dubai was that you applied for a driving license and then you went for the classes. This, I think, is so important, especially women tend to neglect the importance of a driving license. They think that I don't have to go to work, or for homemakers, it is so important to have a driving license. It liberates you, right? It just kind of gives you.
But that's again kudos to the family that I got married to, because again another very very outward Muslim family. Again, like, you know, before I even came to Dubai, they said go do your driving test in India, so that you can do less classes here. Because if you have a driving license from India, you can come to Dubai and do lesser classes. And that time they were failing, like aggressively, right? That time people were like just I didn't know that you really need to know driving to get driving license. In India, they deliver the driving license at home. So I went for like 2-3 classes, understood where the clutch is, where I used to be on a bike in India. So in India, there's no road, there's no place, right? So we used to be on a scooter. All the time from a very young age, right? But the car was okay. So I understood where the gear is, where the clutch is, and, you know, whatever. And normal, not non-automatic cars, right? And then they came and gave the driving license home. In fact, shockingly, after 1 week, he came back and he said, you want international driving license because your daughter is going to Dubai? I can get it tomorrow. Oh my God, imagine.
This was back in India.
So before coming, my in-laws had already told me that, you know, you need a driving license. You can't do anything here without a car.
Yeah.
So make sure you do your test immediately.
So the driving license is important, and because, you know, it kind of liberates you. And the other thing is, you were bold enough to go out and explore things, and you know, just go and on your own after the driving.
I
think this kind of opens up opportunities and gives you more chances of getting being in the right place at the right time. Right?
I think it just worked out. It was blessed. It was a blessing.
Yeah. And so once you got, you know, did you get a full-time job after that at that
place?
Yeah.
So it took me about 6-7 months to get my first landing.
Okay.
And then I got into technology. So technology sales to the hospitality industry. So started selling, you know, internet systems, TV systems to hotels and stuff like that.
Right.
Very different again, because different culture, like all different nationalities in the office, different people, nationalities in the industry. and you don't know anyone at all. So like back in India, what worked was, you know, you have friends, you have their parents, you have Rotary. I used to do different like internships and stuff. So you build some sort of connection. So it's easy to call someone and get a meeting or something like that. But Dubai was like, not only a different place where you don't know anyone, but also a different culture. Like, how do you talk to Egyptians and Syrians and Like, how do you talk to different nationalities and sell something? So it was like a complete culture shock.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, even the office wasn't that welcoming. Like, they were very hold my control. Oh, hotels, okay, 4 stars and 5 stars, don't even come close, not your territory. Go only to 3 stars and 2 stars. So it was like a weird thing. I literally used to come home crying almost every week once at least. Yeah. And every month, I used to literally be in tears when I would come home many times. And my husband would be like, why do you need to do it? Just leave it, quit, you don't need to really go through that. So it was a tough start. And then I used my Dubai tourism experience. Mm. So Dubai Tourism had a website with all the names of all the hotels on the website. Mm. So I started calling the landline because Google Maps wasn't there that time. Today you can get a phone number from Google Maps, right? But that time DTCM website, it was DTCM then. Today is DT. Mm. And I started calling all the individual. I made a list in Excel. I started calling every hotel, every 3 star. I started with, they didn't give me 4 stars and 5 stars. So I started with all the 3 stars, there were about 800, 900 hotels back then. Ooh. And then I started calling, do you need it? Do you need it? And I completely did it on the phone.
Yeah. Tell us about that, because this is an important part here from a sales perspective. When you were doing cold calling, right? So what were you saying and what was the response and how was your experience at that time?
So one thing I hadn't learned was technology. I did 3 post-graduations, but was finance, was marketing, was tourism, but no IT. So I had to now suddenly talk to IT managers and their world was very different, I know when, because I had to prove myself, right, in the company also in my new family because I was arranged married.
Yeah.
And also for myself, for my own self-respect and my own self-esteem, right? Because I'm completely new. Now I have to prove myself totally. And you're 24 years old? How much do you I set an ambition. I said, I'll break the Jumeirah group. The global hotels was done because Marriott, Hilton, they have global agreements and stuff. I said, local group. So I'll break into the Jumeirah. That was my initial ambition when I started, It's okay, let me start with these 3 stars, but eventually I'll break into the Jumeirah group. And they didn't have any business there. And obviously Jumeirahs would not buy, because they have a different requirement and stuff that.
You didn't have internal competition to, you were allowed to go
approach
them.
I didn't have the, it was not a locked account, you will.
Yeah.
So it was not a lock key account, so... But yeah, so your question was how I started the cold calls.
Yeah, what did you tell them? What was the response? What would you say?
Well, again, this is again something which nobody teaches you, unfortunately. And there is no shortcut to learning. So today with rooftop sales, when I work with people and stuff, I think cold calling is a very foundation and a very important thing. What really worked was back in 2004 and today 2023, right? All those people from those 3 stars or whatever that I started talking to, today are SVPs. Because the industry is small and they all grow like how I grew as well, right? So today, all those junior guys who were, someone accepted, someone didn't. And, but you continue persistence and stuff. And then today they become senior packages and stuff like that. Mm. Senior regional. Some have gone to US, some have gone to India. But today we have a global connect because of that people that we built back then. But I just started with simple, can I, what I, then most of them would be send an email. Then you would send an email. But then I think I would call back after 2 days. Did you see it? Oh, I didn't. Oh, I already have. I don't care. It was always like that because again, 3 stars don't have a, so 5 stars have the money, right? To buy a high end technology. And if my 80% of my market share is a 5-star hotel group as a company, obviously I'm not in the price bracket of a 3-star.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like selling SIM card to a person who does not even have a pager, So it was like that. But then I persisted and I don't know. It was tough. And most of the times I was getting a lot of no's and I was still getting the lingo of the right technology. I remember the boss who hired me once was holding his head and was like, who did I get on board? Like, she doesn't know what is an IP address. She doesn't know what is Wi-Fi. And I was like, I used to ask those technical guys, what is this and stuff. But it was lovely. I mean, eventually when I got my first breakthrough,
yeah,
and then I got my second. I think it's always the first one which is the most toughest. But once you get your first one, and then you get your second one, and then you think, now nobody can touch you, you know, then
you get that confidence.
Yeah, it's like that blood on the vampires, you know, the blood touches the first sale, the second sale, then you're like, and I remember in 2 years, I had my salary doubled. In the fourth year, I had my salary again doubled. Like, not double fully, 80% high. Yeah. So, and I had learned this beautiful art of throwing in your resignation and throwing two other offers on the table. And it used to work like wonders, you know. So, I think that was another negotiation skill and stuff. It was like, okay, it was brilliant.
Negotiate your salary hikes.
Yeah, so I think I grew also very fast and suddenly it was amazing.
And while working at these jobs and, you know, this, when did the idea of becoming your own boss, being an entrepreneur, come about, and how did that happen?
See, there's a lot of, you know, male dynamics and a lot of male politics that continue happening in the industry. Again, second thing is that as a female, I continued working forever. Like, I never, because I have such a supportive family as well, like in-laws and stuff also. And we lived in a joint family always, right? So I never had to take a sabbatical or anything when I had my babies and things like that. So I could continue and touch wood for that, you know, not everyone get that opportunity, you know, in a way. But again, I don't think I would be much value at home. So what happened really is after a growing part, and as you keep climbing the ladder, you know, the triangle starts getting narrower in the top. So then there is lesser positions for, and there is many people. But when you're starting off, the foundation is very broad in the bottom, right? So there's many positions, there's more opportunity, there's more this thing. One good thing I did, I think I'm very blessed, is I didn't stick to that same industry. I shifted, and I bravely shifted. Like, this technology that was going into hospitality was one, but then I moved into a system integration next, because the construction boom started around 2009. When you move into system, now you don't put only those two systems that you put. Like, normally we were only putting like NATA, Wi-Fi, network, you know, cable, switching, that sort of a thing, right? HP, Cisco. These were the products we were working. But when you get into system integration, you started putting cameras. We started putting room controls, HVAC. You know, a lot more solutions. And the next position I moved was an audiovisual company, which was into ballrooms and signage and LEDs and, you know, like audio systems and the Crestrons and, you know, those big giants and stuff like that. So this actually widened my knowledge base. Because now I was selling a lot more things, you know. So when I started selling much more things into that same vertical, and then, of course, I added a few verticals like retail, I added malls, I added some, you know, residential, who cares, right? So everything was getting added. But, of course, my strongest connections were hospitality always and some of the owning companies. And Dubai, Middle East works very differently than the world, you know, like what normally works elsewhere will not work here. There's a lot of Habibi business. There's a lot of relationship. I think everywhere you need relationships, but there's a little bit of a tweak in the way we get closures here. So that knowledge domain expanded so much. And then eventually I landed into Samsung, which was at a very good position, and a very good. But then there was this thing about, you know, your career clock going anti against your family clock. Like, you've got your babies, they need your time. You're in a new family, and sometimes you have this guilt, and every woman goes through that, and it's sometimes killing you and stuff. So there was a time when I said, you know what, I need to take a back seat, because I was spending a lot of time on the road. And luckily, as sales, I never had an issue of time. Like, I don't need to be locked to a time. So as long as my numbers have come, you don't need to get stuck as being in an office clocking because after 6 the traffic was horrible.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just get stuck 2 hours on the road for nothing. And we used to live towards Garud and Dera at that time, and Samsung used to be at Internet City. But being a Korean giant, they used to have more of that clock time sort of a mentality, which was never there in my Japanese or my earlier companies and stuff. But after being there for a while, I think I had this thing of losing a lot of extra time on the road, just coming back home, you know. And so mornings were okay because I would be in the office by 7:30. But leaving time would be difficult because, you know, I would get stuck, and I would get stuck like late coming back home. So that was something that was kicking me all the time. And then there was this male politics, a little bit of that and stuff like that. And when you're doing well, then you're like, you know, who cares? And so that's the time when I decided, like, let me take a back seat. Maybe I should find something which is closer to home. Maybe I should find something that allows me to leave after 5, you know, at least after 4 or 5. Like, you know, so there was a time when I said, you know, I need to have a conscious employment at least for 4 years, 3-4 years. Because otherwise I'll miss the entire upbringing of the kid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in Dubai, there's a trend, everyone goes abroad to study and things like that. So if I don't give this next 2 years or 3 years to the children, then they may not have any of my values, and they may not get, like, you know. So there's this entire social stuff that was playing on me. And I said, you know, maybe just for 2 years or 3 years, I should take a sabbatical. But then what happened that time was when I did that, I realized I'm not doing anything. Like, up to 5, I'm completely free.
Yeah.
So I didn't have anything to do. And that's when
the kids only come home by 4 or 5.
And I used to be crazy like my mom a little bit. And I would, every day they have extracurriculars. Like, one day they would go for robotics, they would go for tennis, they would go. So literally out of 5 days of the schooling, 3 days to 4 days, they would have something. Like, 3 days minimum, they would anyway have. So they're not coming home till 6.
So quitting the job wasn't really, I mean, wasn't there was really, like, too much of time at your hand now.
Not really.
You didn't need all that time.
Yeah. But then that time, I did that anyway. And then Samsung came back and said, why don't you continue and work on a freelance and, you know, work, we convert your contract. Then LG came and said, why don't you do the same for us? You know, accounts for them is locked. Account for us is different. You know, you'll still make more than what you make. We promise you. And, you know, all that started coming. And I was still figuring out what to do. And I just started going for these free meetups that were happening everywhere. And this free talks happening everywhere. And I was just like out in the mornings. And I remember my father-in-law was telling me, are you sure you quit work? Because you don't seem to be at home at all. So, yeah, well, that was like the trajectory where I decided to step down from a conventional
job
profile.
Okay.
So.
And then did you start something, like, did you start freelancing with LG?
I did initially.
Yeah.
And then, of course, because I had 15-18 years of experience, there was a lot of companies who wanted to use me without having to, like, pay me the same kind of money that I was worth.
Yeah.
And then I met my mentor, Joesha, back then. So in one of the talks that I came across him, and they have a platform, a gorgeous platform. It was then called Global Strategy Advisory or a Global Entrepreneur Exchange. Today it's rebranded as 10X CEOs. 10X CEOs.
CEOs.
Yeah. So it's a platform called Global Entrepreneur Exchange, GEX.
Okay. Okay.
And then I managed to sign up with a partner in Delhi, where he had a digital marketing company and a social media marketing company. And just before that phase, when I quit and I didn't know what to do, I had a real depression time that time, because I was like, I'm not good at anything. Like, I'm just a shiny shoe salesman. Like, you know, like, I can't make a product of my own, or I'm not clever enough to become a technical consultant to the hospitality or anybody, or a construction market. And I was like, what do I do? Like, I don't want to get into manufacturing. I don't even know how to make a product. Like, you know, I was like, someone needs to give me a product and I can sell it. But I'm a good for nothing. I wasted my entire life and I'm triple post grad. I'm a total loser. I am not good enough to start a business. And what do I do? And there's this entire phase of like that entire negativity. Like, it's like, what do I do? Like, what am I good at? Like, nothing. Like, unless someone gives me something, I can't. And then there were so many people who had offered me like commission sales. And then I was sitting with my customer one time and I'm like, who am I today? Am I Samsung? Am I LG? What am I pitching today? Like, you know, like, because there were so many who had already offered like great incentives and stuff. But I'm like, who am I today? Like, what am I talking about? What should be the first thing that comes out of my mouth? Because I'm meeting now with the CEO of XYZ.
Yeah.
But who am I pitching today?
You were kind of losing track of things when... And then
so,
in that
situation. Then I met this guy from Delhi. He had a social marketing company, social media. I said, yeah. Sales today has to be online. Like, if you're not doing online, how can you sell more, right? How do you scale more? I pursued him for like literally 3 months to do a partnership. And he was like, I don't partner with women. Like, no way. You guys are weird. And I'm like a man dominated and I don't do it. So we have many other freelancers. You also be one of them. Whenever you get any business, I will do. I said, Kalas, you know, what the hell? I'm going to give you my 100% time. Then you need to do 100% exclusive partnership with me. So it's not going to fly without that. So if you don't want to give me 100%, then go do with whoever else you want, you know. But it's not going to grow your business correctly and things like that. And then eventually he came on board and he agreed. It's like so much persistent, like because I was in touch with him and I kept giving him my piece of, you know. And then he finally said, okay, fine, you know, like I think you're different. So maybe we'll do it together and let's give it a try for 2 years or 1 year or whatever. So that was my one partnership that I started. And then I launched this company, which was a marketing company.
Okay.
Where all the back of house was happening in Delhi. And they were a very good agency. They were able to really get... They were one company which was doing performance marketing. Like, I get you the result, then you pay me. Mm. You know, that sort of a thing. It was excellent. They were a team of 25 people and stuff. And we joined it as a partnership. Fantastic profile and everything. Awesome. Like, really good. I learned so much. And I learned how a business is done, how teams are managed, how finances are handled and things like that. And there was a lot of stuff that we learned. So we went into a 50-50 partnership and we said, fine, I'm going to handle everything here and you do the back office, everything. And then he would come often and we would do onboarding and stuff. And that's when I met Joy Shaw, who's my mentor from 10X CEOs and the Global Entrepreneur Exchange. And they were doing this strategy masterclass in Malaysia for 3 days for $4,000, 8 to 8. And it was about... 10x strategy for CEOs and entrepreneurs about how to scale and grow your business. So I was like, okay, now I have this business, which is a social marketing company and stuff. Now let me go and learn how to, you know, scale a business. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And then I signed up with him. And back then he was trying to enroll more people from Dubai and they were here for a World Congress talk that the government had handled or something. So they were here as speakers for that and stuff. So I went to Malaysia for that training. And I did that three-day listing, which was... But what came out of that was the marketing company.
Yeah.
I'm only a salesperson. It's not really my company.
That was your realization.
That was his input for me.
Oh, okay.
And that's what changed my entire life, you know. Like, it was like... You know what, Alifia? You think you are a business partner. You think you are a 50-50 whatever. But the reality is that you are only selling his passion. It's his passion. He started at the age of 16. He's the one who started everything. And it's his passion that you're selling. And technically, if you see it from my eyes, today I see you only as a salesperson who is selling the social marketing company. And more or less... The financials were like weird, like, you know, like if you, for example, if you get 100, no matter what we close at, it would show 80% as cost. So it was literally like a 10, then 20% would be like 10, 50, 10. So 50, it was 50, like 50, literally like a 10% commission. So it was like purely a commission deal and you don't have any control on the cost. And it's like you're not really doing a business, you know. He's tricked you into or whatever. But even if you enjoy it, great. But in other words, you're a salesperson. So I'm like, what? And then I'd met even, Samir, our common friend, right, GP. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, I was like figuring out what to do because, you know, again, that phase of what can I do as a business and no need, I'm not good at anything. And then it was just this thing. And then he mentioned to me once that, you know, your entire face lights up when you're talking about how you manage customers or how you manage your no client to a yes. And for some reason, when we were talking and stuff, he would be like, your entire body language changes when you're discussing sales.
Yeah.
So why don't you launch your own product of sales?
By the way, we have to tell the audience who Samir is. Samir GP is a life coach. We call him Mr. Awesome because he used to run a show called Awesome Walkers. And we will have Samir GP on the Be Your Own Boss podcast one day very soon. But as Samir GP, this is the magic that he does, right? He talks to people and he gets the best out of you. He makes you realize who you are. And
so I think Joisha and Samir were the two people that transformed what I ended up making out of myself. So these were the, you know, like you say, you need that, the catalyst to shift your curve, right? So... So Samir gave me that idea that, you know, something changes in your energy when you're talking about like sales.
Hmm.
And then he, like you said, he's a life coach, right? And he said, you know, there are so many life coaches like me and our biggest headache is to get people as clients. So, and then there's always this discussion where like, can you help me get clients? Can you like, you know, but at the end of the day, it's your passion, you can sell it best. Nobody can normally just sell your passion. Like, you know, you're passionate about this. You're going to onboard people easily like this. But sometimes people hire salespeople to sell their passion. And then they wonder why the salesperson is not performing.
Yeah.
And then most business owners have hired salespeople. And salespeople are not delivering what they think they should be delivering. And then guess what? They are paying them salaries. They're paying them incentives, everything. But their conversions are very low. Most times business owners are not taking money for themselves enough home.
Yep.
but they're paying everyone salaries.
Then
before you know it, 6 months, 8 months, then they fire that guy but guess what? 6-8 months of salary gone and no result. And he just lost that 6-8 months of salary, which was taken away from his own family and given to someone. So there's this little equation of how it needs to get done right. To get the maximum benefit out of the salespeople that you're hiring, get them to perform. But that does not mean that you hire a salesperson and you can switch off completely. Mm. And you think it doesn't work that way. Because that passion to transpire from you to the sales guy, it needs a certain steps and it needs a certain science and it needs hand-holding and it needs that, you know, convincing. And because what you have convinced yourself... He's not yet fully convinced. So first you need to sell to your internal team. Then he can automatically sell to his customers. So this is the thing that most people miss out, because of which you end up hiring salespeople and then they don't train them as well. And then money is just wasted fully. So it's also very stressful for the sales guy. It's more stressful for the sales. I want to say this twice. But it's more stressful for the sales guy who's not performing than it is for the business owner who's paying him salaries.
Yeah.
Because that guy, he takes that stress home and he becomes the bad guy at home. You know, every time we miss our targets, we are bad people at home. We are bad, talking badly to our kids, to our parents, to our spouse, to the people that we love most is where we remove the grunt of a bad sales day.
Because those results kind of define us as a person. So if you're like, if you're not performing, you know you're not performing. And that kind of, you know, helps. It kind of doesn't help you know, with the self-confidence.
So that's why I always tell business owners and sales bosses and stuff like that, that don't make our life more tough. You've got to help us out to perform better. You've probably not given me the right tools which will help me to deliver what you need and what I need to go home happy. You know, so just asking people number, it doesn't work that way. There's certain steps that you need to. So change your KPIs to include those smaller steps, which will make this entire thing more fun. Because guess what? Who's more happiest when he closes the deal? Not you. The guy who closed the deal, he's happier than even you.
Yeah.
You know, so can you bring that smile
kick
to his
that
face?
You get out of closing a deal in sales? It's, I mean, nothing can compare to that, right?
Yeah. Like, that happens. Because the guy on the top sometimes is like, oh, bad margin. But this guy is like, I closed. You know, like, so it's very important to make sales fun. So as rooftop sales, our mandate is sales is fun, is a fun game. Let's play to win.
Nice.
So that's what we try to do. So it's more about bringing those smiles to those passionate guys. And guess what? When you've closed a 3-star hotel, you never want to go back to that. You only want to close a 5-star after. And you want to close 3 stars anyway, but this has to be a strategy where 3 stars automatically fall in and then your 5 stars are coming and then you want to get to your 7 stars after. So that's how it works.
Right. So when once you started rooftop sales, tell us about that process, like of establishing rooftop sales as an organization.
So that's something I got from the strategy masterclass. Because what he really explained to me was, you know, that you're not good at anything. That's one thing I got out of this. That he said that I'm from this discussion from these two most important people in my life.
Yeah.
What I identified is that sales is the toughest thing for most people in the world. And, you know, when you're just doing it naturally, then you go back and, you know, you're like, but then he said, your real product is your time. That's what you're going to charge for. So you're not going to just take commissions or whatever. But if someone wants to represent your product and give you a commission, then all you got to do is charge them for time. Because then you will spend that time to bring that result. And that's what it is. So that changed my entire game. So then after that, it was all about, yeah, fine, you want commissions, great. I will position your product, cool. But then it's going to charge you a retainer. And then it can come with commissions, no problem.
So was that the business model of rooftop sales?
That was my first business model.
Okay.
And then it evolved again. Because what started happening is, I'm still the person who's going to customers and selling, right? But then what I realized, some out of my further, you know, like they say, when you start a new business, it takes time to nurture it and you figure out what's the real monetization plan that comes out of it. So,
and it evolves.
And it evolves all the time also. So then I changed it to a little bit different.
Yeah.
Where I said, I'll engage. I didn't learn this in my sleep. I learned it with by rubbing my shoes on the road and, you know, like breaking so many heels in construction sites. Like, it's not, I did not like just wake up one day and become a good salesperson, right? So I did this few things and I learned a few things. So instead of depending on me to bring your sales result every time, let me help you to build your team, which can deliver like me. Like, it's not something I only can do. Guess what? Your team can also do. And if you can do it from your team, then you will not need me. So then the goal became, why should you need me for 3-year contracts? Why can't you use your team and they will deliver for your 10-year contracts? You know, that sort of a thing. So why don't you improve your model? Why don't you improve your, where you don't need an external person to come and do your this thing. So let me help you to equip your team with the skills that they need to sell like me. So this is where the model eventually changed. And this is when it became an enabling. Yeah, it became an enabling thing. So we said, okay, come with a training or you can do a coaching or you can do a consulting. But consulting was like 2 clients and 3 clients. And this is something which is a model from even the 10X CEOs, which is a platform that I partnered eventually with. And inshallah, we're bringing that platform to Dubai.
Nice.
It's been here for a while. We failed already by bringing it to a new country. But by next year, we have figured out all the things not to do. So hopefully, inshallah, we should be able to do it right from next year.
Awesome. All the best for that. So you're gonna launch 10X CEOs in Dubai in a way. And you'll be heading that.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So it's a platform where we'll enroll more coaches on board, and then they can have their clients, and we'll facilitate them with the tools to be able to do it right.
So it looks like you went from selling to teaching how to sell to teaching people to teach how to sell.
Yeah. So train the trainer sort of.
Now it's train the trainer, right? So now you're teaching people to teach how to sell.
That's right.
That's the level you're at. Brilliant. Brilliant. So having the journey that you've had, right, and you know, the kind of growth that you've seen in sales and everything, those for people who are just getting started and they want to make sales as their career, what's your advice for them?
Well, there's no real thing like technically everybody is a salesperson, you know, so it's not like choose sales as your career, whether you've taken sales as your career or even if you've not taken sales as your career, you still need to sell. You know, so like we say always that if you're married, are you married?
Yes, I am.
That means you're a salesperson.
I'm a salesperson.
Are you still married?
So it requires selling skills to
every point
get
of
married
time wherever
marriage.
You are, even if you're negotiating a deal at a shop, you need sales by default.
Yeah.
So the best salespeople in the world.
Our children, right?
You know it, right? Our kids, because you come for my training. So the best salespeople in the world are kids.
Yeah.
They know exactly who is their customer.
Yeah.
And exactly what sales technique will work with who.
Hmm.
What to say to the parent, to what will work with the grandparent, what will work with the mother, what will work with the father. So kids are the best salespeople in the world, right? So they know. So everybody is born with sales skills. But it's just that the rejections that we keep getting and the logical mind that keeps on overpowering ourselves, that we stop selling and then we shut the door and then we don't want to be the one that is going and asking because of rejection and that fear of rejection. So, and then what happens? And you just settle. You just learn to settle in life. So as a human being also, if you've not learned how to pursue, how to push, how to convince, this is like sales, right? And if you don't do that, then you just settle with much less than what you deserve. And that's not how anyone should live their life. So I think sales is a life skill. It is a minimum requirement for existence. And ideally, they should teach it in school. Unfortunately, they don't. They teach marketing, technology, engineering, AI, IoT. Nobody wants to teach you how to sell.
And you do, as in roof, under rooftop sales, you do teach people how to sell, and also you're getting into train the trainer now. For people who are watching this right now and are interested in learning and enhancing their sales skills, what's the best way to find you enroll for your courses?
Well, we have a website called www.rooftopsales.com. So it's rooftopsales.com. Just get on the website, you know, just put in an inquiry. One of our team will call you. And that's it. You get started and don't not do it, because it's the most important thing. And we have even if your profession is not sales per se, you can still do a training, which is a 2-day training, which we love to do it over weekends. So you get your week, which is free. So in this 2-day training, what really works is you get the whole cycle of what starts from the start to what goes in the end. Because most of the times it's non-awareness, because of which you don't know why that deal dropped. But if that deal drops, you need to know, was it at the initial phase that it dropped? Was it in the middle? Was it in the end of the sales cycle? So there's a sales process and a sales cycle. And that knowledge and awareness is step one. I think that everyone should know. And then normally, naturally, as humans, some people may be very good at opening the door. But again, most times, that same guy who's opening the door is not normally good at closing. Or some people will be extremely good at closing and opening maybe, but he may not be very good at following up. and he may not be very good in, like, you know. And normally pre-sales come in well, the year where the product team and the pre-sales and the technical team come in, do the middle part of that thing where they would design that product to customize it to the customer's requirement. Sometimes, unfortunately, companies make the pre-sales guy become the salesperson. But this pre-sales guy, if he's technically geeked and into the, you know, creating that solution, he may not necessarily naturally be very good at opening and making cold calls to opening a door.
Yeah.
Or he sometimes may be very good in qualifying the product, but he may not be very good in closing and bringing the deal home or that commercial negotiation or something. So it's about awareness about what are your strengths, where are you lacking, what is your, where are you naturalist, and where do you need to build more. So ideally, when we coach companies, we identify the natural skill of the person, because sometimes when you tell the person who is into good into this productizing, the customization, you know, qualifying the technical aspects of the product, suddenly if you tell him to close, he is not in his comfort zone.
Yeah.
Suddenly, if you tell the guy who's closing a lot to do opening, he's not in his comfort zone. And that's the reason why energy drops. So either you can train them to improve these two angles, or you can have different people at different segments of the cycle. So this is something, when I do this in the first 3 months, we see results. So immediately within the first 2-3 months, everyone sees results. And the biggest achievement is everyone is happy. Yeah. Because the people who are doing whatever they're doing, they're enjoying what they are doing.
Yeah.
So, and they have a clarity that this is my natural this thing. So when you identify this and you put the right person for the right job, or he's aware that this is where it's going to be, whatever. So then we encourage him to get into a better ambience. We say, okay, go to a nicer place and do that. Start some music. Whatever triggers to you, you know. So
yeah.
Because you need certain influences to add on it.
And I think that this is a very important part of people management, right? Like, you put the right person at the right place, and then he or she will perform.
There
is, you know, everybody wants to be at their best, right?
True.
Yeah. So, and I think this is a point where entrepreneurs, business owners, and leaders in corporations, you should, you know, pay attention to this part here, the sales cycle and the different roles that a person needs to play in the sales cycle, and put the right person at the right place. Don't expect a fish to climb a tree. You can't compete in, you know, So, Alifia, looking at your experience as a businesswoman versus your experience as a salaried person when you were working in a job earlier, right? What do you think is the difference? What is it about being a businesswoman that you like?
I think, honestly, being a business woman is a lot of responsibility. I think it's so much easier to be an employee because you just don't do the finance. So one thing that happened was as a businesswoman, see, my natural passion is sales, right? And that's what really gives me a high. But as a business woman, then you have to do finance. You've got to do, like, you know, sales, but you also have to deliver the product. So there was a time when I realized that I just like to onboard clients on my rooftop sales. But then I don't want to do the training,
yeah.
You know, if you will. And then after doing like some 20, 25, there was a point when I said, if I do even one more, I will suicide tomorrow. I said, I'm not the training material. I'm not a trainer, you know. But of course, people love to learn. And most of our programs are so, like, you know, like so engaging. And so what I did is I don't do theory at all. Like, it's completely practical, working on your number, working on your pitch, working on your this thing. And that coaching becomes fun. And, you know, it becomes more like, you know, engaging and, you know, like that. But I'm like, trainings, I reduce now to like 4 in a year, like once a quarter. That's
okay.
It. Maybe once in the start of the year to do your blueprint for the year. Like, you want to do your blueprint for the year. Like sales targeting, and what's your number, and what's your game plan, what's your sales blueprint for the year. That's a very, very It's a brilliant workshop that happens because it gives you this entire clarity. And we reduce the trainings now. Earlier, there was a time when we used to do trainings almost two times or three times in a month. But now we reduced it to like four times in a year as a class, you know. Like, and the training is more of a platform where anyone who doesn't necessarily need coaching, anyone who just wants to understand what's the sales process, anyone who just wants to understand the foundation of sales, you know, like you have to understand what is from A to Z. You need to know all the alphabets of from A to Z.
Yeah.
Once you just know it all, then you can have appreciation of where you are. And now you know what you need to do to not let it drop. Some sort of consciousness will come through.
Yeah.
Because now you're aware of the A to Z. If you just don't know which are the alphabets you're missing, then you don't know why your sale is dropping or why your conversion rates are low.
Yeah.
So this is something that we did. But business is a lot more commitment. It's a lot more... I was clocking in 16 hours. I've never done that in my employment. I may have done it like till 12 hours, maybe 12 to 14. But when I started the rooftop sales, we were literally clocking in 16 to 18 hours a day. I set up a porta cabin in my house, in my villa, because it was crazy during COVID. And we were doing trainings in the evenings because that's the time people were liking it. And I had to keep my husband out of my room, and my kids were not allowed to come to me after their school. Like, what am I doing? You know, like, they come back from school and they want to meet mama. No, I'm doing a training. Stay out, quiet. Don't even breathe. It was like crazy, you know. So, so then I set up a porta cabin in my house, a construction cabin. I said, okay, this is my office and this is my base. It's been lovely because, of course, in your starting, you're creating programs, you're creating courses, you're creating everything. You're still figuring out. I think I did my website three times. The social media setting it up, Google, you know, everything you're doing, like your CRM you're setting up, and you don't even know what is right, what is wrong. Nobody teaches us all this, right? So you try, you're haggling. And then it's working, it's not working. And then you're changing another one, another one. At one time, I had three CRMs up ongoing at the same time. So it was a lot of work and it's a lot of commitment. And alone again, right? So I was, at some point, I was always looking for like a COO material, like, you know, operations head who would take care of that, that mundane, repetitive operations, which is extremely key. Because one thing I learned was... you need sales at the start of a new business, if you will. But after that, you need systems to really allow you to scale. So I think as businesses, we need sales in the starting. But after that, if you have systems in place, if you have right processes in place, then it's easy to scale more. Because at the end of the day, you will onboard. But if you don't have the right system and the structure to be able to deliver that volume that's coming, you're going to have unhappy customers and you're going to drop the ball. So this is the thing that I actually learned from the 10X CEOs platform, because their structure for operations and that entire, you know, the 10 pillars that they focus and work on is brilliant, brilliant. So it just like, you know, figured out so much things. And coming as an employee where you were only doing one department, guess what? The company has 7 departments or 10 departments.
Yeah.
But we don't even know anything. You're the receptionist, you're the finance, you're the delivery man, you're the logistics man, you're the procurement man, you're like everything, you know, like, and you're also the trainer and the coach and, oh my God, it was tough.
Yeah.
And a lot of hard work. And
It's, and I think this is one key difference between being an employee versus being an entrepreneur, that you have to, as a business person, you need to be in everything. But talking of business and talking of entrepreneurship, there is one thing I want to hear from you before we conclude here, and that's about Entrepreneurs Connect, which is a platform that you run. So tell us about Entrepreneurs Connect. What is it? When do you meet? What's the purpose? And how can people
benefit? Entrepreneurs Connect is a platform. It's an online platform. We meet every Saturday online. Dubai time, 8 to 9:30. And this is where different entrepreneurs come from all over the world. So sometimes we have India, we have Bangkok, we have Hong Kong, we have Europe, we have Australia, we've had Malaysia. So different people from different, of course, a lot of Middle East, Saudi, Qatar, UAE, a lot of India from Delhi, different parts of India and stuff. So technically, why this platform was born was because during COVID in 2020, everybody was complaining. Everybody was like, no money, no orders, no customers, no whatever. So I had clients that time with rooftop sales. And then people were like struggling and stressing and talking about firing people and talking about not being able to make ends meet and big companies, because our consultancy was with huge company, multinationals, and they were still talking like that. So imagine what the small startups, small SME were doing. So one thing we realized then is just out of that coaching and stuff, what came out was like, guess what? You know, we are only talking to the same customer base that we have been talking in the last 3-4 years. But why are we not getting onboarding new customer base? We are only talking to the same customer. Oh no, that guy buys from this company only. Oh, that guy buys that product only. Oh, this guy buys from, they have a payment term and all, they do from that company only. Oh, this guy is not our customer because he then doesn't like us or whatever and whatever. So all this was going on and I'm like, the only way, because if your current customers have orders with you already, but they're not able to pay you, or if your current customers are not taking any new orders, the only way you can stay sustainable is, of course, wait for them to be able to pay you or wait for them to give you more orders. Or, you know, just go on. How many more coffees can you have, right? At the end of the day, he has what he has. So now if I have to do, can I move to this other competitor's customers? So my first job when I was in Bombay was with the Oberoi Hotels. And the only target we had was to make sure nobody goes to the Taj. So if you get a client which is not a Taj customer, you get one incentive point. But if you get a customer which is a Taj customer and who comes to an Oberoi, you get 10 incentive points.
Wow. And that's, I think this is important, right? Because that's sales, that's business. You, as a salesperson, your responsibility is to go grab the business from competition. That's so yeah, this is brilliant. I think this is, I'm liking that the way you put it.
Correct. So it was crazy. So the entire incentive plan was to, you know,
yeah.
So I was like, why be also complacent? And if you're just going to do what you've already always been doing, that means you're just admin. Then don't call yourself sales. That means you're just taking orders and quoting and submitting, but you're not really doing any new business development. So there was this, you know, thing that we evolved that was sales, but there's business development. So can you get new business and can you continue maintaining the sales? And then again, now my strategy has changed. Like current business does not need the most senior sharks of a company. Current business can be done by admin staff also, because the need of the current business is different. It's about how fast you deliver, how fast you quote, how
maintain.
Fast you're, it's more about, it's different.
Yeah.
And I also learned one thing, that these guys in business development who need to go and acquire new customers is supposed to be out and about. But suddenly a current customer is going to ask you something, and if you don't deliver immediately, but he's out. So how do you, so it's wrong. How we do it is wrong. How everyone does it is wrong. The biggest multinational companies do it wrong. So if we can actually do a separate strategy for, and this new business nobody wants to do. You know what happens normally when we join a company? If I join a company newly, in the first year I will do sales, business development. Next 3 years I'm only doing management. Because already that new clients that I created is giving me repeat business, and that's it. So, unfortunately for the company, I'm not bringing any more new. And then I'm dominating these. These are my accounts because I brought it and it's mine. All the new stuff that will come from here is going to be. So unfortunately, the skill that I had to go and get a new, like the shark, you know, who would go and get new fish, is gone and it's a complacent. So we started Entrepreneur Connect with the idea that the 6 degrees of separation, that 6 people around you and the 6 people around each of those 6 people can potentially connect to the 7 billion population of the world.
Wow.
That's all you need. So how much sales do you need, right? So if you can just connect correctly to the 6 people around you and the 6 people around each of them, you potentially can network with Bill Gates in the US as well.
Hmm.
So then the idea is, can you change those 6 people? So can you find new 6 people around you? Or can you at least find 2 new of the 6 around you?
Right.
Consciously. So Entrepreneurs Connect is an online platform where we just sit and we say, ask me for whose contact you want. I look at my phone book and I give it to you now.
Yeah.
So it's very different than many other platforms, but it's our referral business, referral program. And it's totally free at the moment. But we want to scale it, and there's going to be a cost to, you know, grow it and scale it. So inshallah, we should nominal, but it's going to be a not-for-profit platform anyway.
Mm.
And the only idea and the only agenda is, how can I get more sign-ups, a new reference or a new friend, or like we met, you know, on Entrepreneur. So many people I met. My second business partner was someone in Delhi. Again, Delhi, I don't know why, but yeah, Mumbai and Delhi and stuff like that. So today we are like, you connect. Many people are being able to make business in, you know, you went to Bangkok, right?
Thailand. Yep.
And you met one of the members from the Entrepreneur Connect, right? So you just
I went to Hong Kong. I met Bharat Nangia there.
Yeah.
A lot of the guests on the Be Your Own Boss podcast, I have met through Entrepreneurs Connect. So it is an important, and this is why I wanted to bring it about, because the more people your network is your net worth, right? So Entrepreneurs Connect helps us to connect with more people, and I think this is brilliant work that you're doing.
Yeah, so it's brilliant, and it's a team of leadership that we have. I can't do this alone. So because it's a pro bono, it's a free this thing, but it takes great time and effort.
Yeah.
So I really want to thank the few great-minded people who wanted to come together. And we've run it now since 3 years. We have had our 3rd anniversary very recently as well. So,
yeah.
So it's at least proven that it's a model that works. And it's proven that it's a thing that's adding value to people. And so I want to invite all your audience as well to join us on Entrepreneurs Connect on a Saturday morning. We can give you the links and we can add it.
We'll include in the description.
It's completely free. It's online. At least your first meeting will forever be free, because it's never going to be charged. It's not a monetization platform really for us. But it's more about extending your one connection to another country, to another border, to another place.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, the point, if I may summarize, is that you may have contacts in your phone book that somebody else needs to, and vice versa, right? There are, you may want to reach out to a particular company, and somebody must be knowing somebody there in that company, and then you can reach out to them and expand your network.
Yeah.
So contact sharing. Alifia, such a wonderful journey and such a wonderful conversation. I don't really want to end this, but I think I have to ask you one final question before we conclude. How was your experience being on the Be Your Own Boss podcast?
I loved it. I love your passion. I think that's what passes on. It's your passion, your will to do this. At what time did we meet? 5 o'clock? I'm so sorry I was half an hour late. But I met him at 5 a.m. We are here on this mountain. You didn't introduce the place.
Oh, yeah.
You're in the big desert and stuff. And the sun is right here. And we're both wearing goggles now.
By the way, guys, I have to admit on one thing, that we're doing this interview. This is the second attempt of this interview. We have done this interview about a month ago, I think. It was the same place. Early in the morning, we met at 5 and we came here and we did the interview, and the audio didn't work. So we have redone the interview. This is the second attempt of that interview. So Alifia, thank you for doing it again. And
I think we fixed a lot of things that could be done better. And it's always a there's always a scope for improvement every time. So
absolutely. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Alifia, for sharing your journey and your story with us. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that was Alifia Sura, the founder of Rooftop Sales. And you've been watching and listening to Be Your Own Boss.